From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 16th day of August 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Matt Bennett will be here, too, to take a look at the cash grain market. And as we close out our time together, we'll discuss the weather forecast with Mike Tenora. He's from T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. Along the way, I'll tell you some about the conversations I had with a Chinese delegation this morning that was visiting us on the Agronomy Day event at the South Farms today. So stay with us for this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online at willag.org.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Farm Credit Illinois, a financial cooperative owned and directed by its borrower members and serving the needs of rural communities, farm families, and agriculture. Dedicated to helping farm families succeed today and tomorrow.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Thursday afternoon. Thanks, by the way, to all the folks that came out to Agronomy Day here on the Urbana-Champaign campus this morning. It was a really good day, and as I was finishing up near the end of the morning, right at the noon hour, in fact, I talked quite a long time with a delegation of Chinese that came in from an animal feed company that imported soybeans from the United States. And they were a fairly large company, had operations in three or four continents. And we're talking quite a bit about what that might look like. Dan Zwicker is here from Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. And Dan, the conversation was pretty interesting. Eventually, they came around and they asked me about tariffs. I didn't ask them about tariffs. I did tell them I was with the press, so I'm going to go with it's okay to talk about some of the things that they were telling me. So I explored with them, Dan, a couple of things. I wanted to know something about corn production and soybean production in China because, you know, we get a lot of information. However, in the northeastern quadrant of that nation of China, we know that's where they grow corn, and that they grow soybeans along an arc that sort of arcs from the northeast all the way down to the southeast, and then it moves west in the middle of the arc there. However, in that northeastern corner, they don't rotate, and I did not know that, and they plan to. And China, the nation, can prompt that along, maybe even force it, I think, but I won't quite say that. But so I think just as this year, Dan, where we saw more soybean production in that area, I think we could see more soybean production there. That's one of the interesting notes. And I just didn't realize they weren't rotating crops up there very much. The delegation had a Monsanto rep with them, too, from China, from that area. So he was of that descent. And Monsanto and Pioneer, or Bayer and Pioneer, if you want to say it that way now, are both operating in China. We knew that part. They asked me what the U.S. Farmers thought about the tariffs. I told them they didn't like it. And they're essentially, they came back and said, this hurts Chinese, this hurts American farmers. And from their perspective, it hurt Chinese labor. And we had talked a lot prior to that, Dan, about bean meal because they're an animal feed operation. But they're also a crusher, apparently, or they're buying. I suspect they're a crusher. I haven't looked this up. But that China prefers to buy whole soybeans because then they're able to crush into the two products, bean meal and bean oil. Meal, of course, is the protein product, and that goes into animal feed and some other things. And then oil has to be processed as well into vegetable oil. It needs to be clarified for that and some other items like maybe soy diesel. And so they saw that as a manufacturing and labor issue. And they wanted, at least this company, said that they would prefer to compromise sooner rather than later, and maybe that's some of what we're seeing at this point. So it was a really interesting conversation. It took quite a while to have, but I learned some things. And I guess from what I'm seeing in the overnight and day trade, Dan, apparently there must be something afoot. Am I right that China looks to be importing some soybeans from the United States?
Well, they have unloaded a few vessels from the U.S., but I think what got today's market more moving to the upside was is that their lower level trade talks, I think, are going to begin in another week or so. I think there was a story out that at least the lower level trade negotiators are going to get together and see if they can kind of work something out. So I think there's some renewed optimism that the fact that they're talking again, at least is encouraging people some ideas that maybe something's going to get resolved. I'm not quite there yet. I don't think it's going to end that quick, but it's always good to have them talking. And I think that is one thing. Now, China's going to have to buy U.S. soybeans at some point in time. Now, the question is how much are they going to have to buy from us, and how much can they substitute or use other protein supplements for soybean meal rather than U.S. soybeans? But we kind of knew that they would be able to, South America would be able to keep supplies going at least into August, maybe September, but then they would have to eventually turn to the United States. And I still think there's all kinds of monkey business that can go on as far as change of origination. I know nobody likes to talk about that, but you can, you know, take a load of U.S. soybeans, take it into XYZ port, change documentation that it came from another country, and then take it right on into China. Now, that's a little extra expense to do that, but that can happen. I mean, all you have to do is make something illegal, and they'll find a way, people will find a way to get the product. And tax here is another way, or tariff or tax, whatever you want to call it. There's going to be ways people's going to try to get around that. So they still may be U.S. soybeans, but they may say they're coming in from Canada, or they may be still coming in from Argentina or whatever. I mean, money corrupts everybody. And if you got enough of it to flow it around, you can get anything done. So we may not necessarily see the sales announced going to China, but they may come across as unknown destinations, and who knows where that means. And they can be, you know, shift around different documentation here and different documentation there. So China's not going to be totally, will not be able to survive without any U.S. soybeans. So the question is, how much are they going to be able to cut back from the U.S.? But they do have to buy some soybeans, I think, this fall and winter until we get a new crop out of South America. So I do think demand from China is going to be picking up. And, you know, today's market, you know, being up 27, 28 cents while we do this recording, you know, we've almost regained what we lost off of USA's crop report here of a week ago. And if today's advances hold through Friday, we're going to register a weekly reversal to the upside. And that is, and the low held above the August low, or the July low. So as far as I'm concerned, you can start drawing an upward trending channel in soybeans, and you can do that also in corn, because corn today is also, if today's advances hold through the close and hold through Friday, we're going to have a weekly reversal up on corn futures too. And like I said, it held above the July low. So the monthly reversal that was posted during the month of July is still intact. And with today, and if we finish out this week with weekly reversals to the upside, then the market has had a correction. It was overbought going into that USDA crop report. USDA decided to go on the high side on the yield. kind of shocked the trade. We went sharply lower, and now we've pretty well have kind of regained most of what we lost on that August crop report. And technically, the markets are set up to punch out those July highs and maybe grind higher and close out the month of August higher. So we'll have to take one step at a time. But technically, when I look at the corn and soybean chart, I have to be generally positive at this point. But I also know that, the market gets awful skittish on fundamental news and fundamental chatter, especially trade is the key issue here. Wheat futures haven't been able to quite muster last week's losses, but they're close. If they would have another strong day tomorrow, wheat futures could also close out the week higher with a weekly reversal to the upside. So technically, corn, soybeans, and wheat, I feel generally positive toward this advance that began during the month of July, extending it south as we go on into harvest.
You know, you mentioned substitution. I asked this morning about that three different times, never got an answer. I suppose for me that tells me something, but that either they really are finding substitutions or they just simply don't have another way to do it. And there's one other number that I think, Dan, you'll be interested in. China imports 100 million metric tons of soybean meal, and that's maybe soybeans processed into bean meal, but that number, so there's a number, and a third of it is made from U.S. beans.
True. Well, substitutions is nice to say that they can look for substitutions, but as soon as you substitute some other product, whether it be a canola meal for a protein source, it just means it displaces demand. So, the people that were using the substitutes then will turn to the U.S. for soybean meal for the proteins or soybeans. So that's why I don't think this trade deal is going to be that big a deal in the long run. And I think Trump's going to win it. I think he's going to get what he wants over the long pull. And I think trade is going to be generally very positive for farmers as we go down the road.
You may be in the minority of people I have on air, but well, maybe not. I don't know, but there are those who believe that's the case, and much of the trade is very scared that the market will go away and won't come back. So we'll have to see how that turns out. But still, nonetheless, technically today, you think this market is set up to do something good, potentially through the end of August. If we do that and we get into harvest, can we maintain a sideways to upward momentum, do you think?
Well, that'll probably depend upon whether or not USDA is correct on their yield projections. I think, once we get in the field, we get the combines rolling, and then if USDA's numbers are verified with above better than expected yields, then it'll probably be pretty difficult to maintain an upward trend. But if we happen to get into the fields and all of a sudden the yields maybe are not necessarily up to what they were last year, people keep reporting, well, the yields are no better than last year, or they're actually behind last year's number, then we're going to go higher because USDA is using yields way above last year's number. So we'll have to kind of see how the combines roll. But then we may have, a trade settlement in the works or some kind of workaround for a while. And the demand keeps coming at us a little stronger than what everybody expects. I mean, if anything, that I have to compliment USDA for getting everybody good and bearish here before our harvest. They do a good job of that with the August crop report, and they did a real good job of it this year. So they got the psychology of the trade is bearish. They got everybody scared that the big crop's there. And yeah, when you look at the supply demand tables, boy, that soybean thing really stands out as something as a regular mountain maybe to climb on that ending stocks, but we'll have to see whether or not USDA's yields hold out. Maybe they went too high this time, and maybe they got to backpedal all the way into January. For one thing, you know, soybean yield, I noticed that Todd, I think, made the comment that USDA's yield hasn't really changed more than a bushel over the last 13 years or something like that between the August report and the January report. Well, it's time for a miss.
It's not, the miss hasn't been more than a bushel lower.
Well, the problem with that, USDA, you can catch USDA if they're wrong on the beans, and then they have to go back and make adjustments, and then they maybe either do the adjustments on harvested acres rather than yield. So, I mean, who says that the yield wasn't wrong? So they get two choices, to either make the adjustments on the yield or make the adjustments on harvested acres. And we'll see, but I think that's probably one of the reasons why maybe the number hasn't been missed. But again, it's been long enough that it is time for USDA to have a miss. So we'll have to see how that turns out when the combines roll.
Indeed. Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
Okay, very well, Todd.
Dan Zwicker is with Zwicker Consulting from Waco, Texas. Now let's turn our attention to the cash grain side of the marketplace. Matt Bennett is here on this Thursday afternoon from Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds. Good afternoon to you, Matt. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Hey, you're traveling. I can hear that in the background. Where are you headed? Any place important?
Well, I've been in the Dakotas this week and then into western Minnesota talking markets. Been pretty interesting. When I got west to Sioux Falls, basically get into a lot of areas of South Dakota that need a rain pretty bad. Most producers that I talk to, which I think this is normal, most years, you know, with the producers in South Dakota, they don't think that they can hit 170, you know, that's been forecast. And I'm not, well, I don't know. The east side of the state's going to be awfully good for them to be able to do so.
And so what'd you find in Minnesota, or have you made your way through there yet?
Yeah, in Minnesota, you know, I was a little farther north. I know whenever you get farther south, they had way too much water early, but, you know, they had a pretty decent weather pattern thereafter. Farther north you go, a lot of those folks basically due east of Fargo, maybe an hour, where I was at last night, they had an ideal crop going up until about the last 4 weeks, and they haven't had a rain since. So definitely taking the top off. They're trying to get a handle on what their crop's going to look like. Obviously, soybeans are maybe under a little more pressure, if no more rain. But corn crop definitely is probably, in their opinion, has come off of a record crop down to maybe 15-20% off of what they were thinking previously.
And it's a lot easier to windshield a crop in those parts of the world, especially parts of Minnesota, Iowa, where you can see the tops of it.
Yeah.
But that crop you're talking about in that to the east of Fargo, an hour, hour and a half, I assume you're headed towards St. Cloud or somewhere in that area. That crop looks still pretty good, or at least it did a month ago, and I assume it looks decent from the road today.
Yeah, I think that it looked really good a month ago, but what most of them were telling me is they just haven't had any rain since then for the most part, so they're kind of frustrated with that particular situation. Yeah, I think that the crop is still awfully large, even if you have a few areas that or maybe off a little bit from what the USDA was expecting. I do think there'll be some areas that might eclipse, you know, even what people are thinking as far as how big the crop might be. So I would be too cautious as to kill this crop too much just yet.
Were they more hopeful about their soybean crop?
If they get a rain. But if they don't get a rain, they're pretty worried. I got to admit, both in most places of South Dakota, I was spoke at three different places there. And then whenever I got into Minnesota, same thing. They just, you could tell the beans are kind of giving up in the middle of the afternoon. I told them in 2012, we saw the same thing. Our beans looked horrible in the middle of the afternoon. And, you know, we got that hurricane to come up there in early August and saved our bean crop. So hopefully they'll get some sort of a soaking rain sometime soon. Maybe it'll save them too.
And then finally, because you've been in the Dakotas, how worried are they about the tariff situation and not being able to use the PNW, because most of their crop goes out in that direction?
They're pretty worried because right now the basis is horrible to the PNW. And so, you know, they definitely are talking about it. They're talking about soybean basis, you know, best they can get maybe a dollar under right now. And so the interesting thing that I found, though, whenever I was around west of Mitchell, talked to producers about their fall basis for new crop corn, and you know, they said at the co-op they were 60 under, but at the ethanol plant they were 38 under. And I found that extremely hard to believe, because locally there in central Illinois, we see a lot of 30 and 35 under. So it's a pretty good development for them, getting a couple of ethanol plants in there in places that they didn't previously have them, gobbling up some of those bushels. It's really helping their basis.
On that note, you watch the ethanol numbers all the time. They have looked good, and looks like they're going to continue to do so, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one thing that I think we all need to hang our hat on, is both the U.S. and world situation from a demand perspective. You know, it's friendly. And when you look at carryout numbers for both, it's friendly. The problem is you've got a soybean market that's been pretty depressed. You know, you've got a great day today, but overall, we all know it's really struggled, and that's been one limiting factor for this corn market.
Hey, thanks so much. Anything else before I let you go for the day?
Nope. You guys have a great day.
All right. Safe travels, my friend.
Yep. Thank you.
That, of course, is Matt Bennett. He's with Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds, out of Windsor, Illinois. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Thursday afternoon. Mike Tenner is now here from T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Mike, we had a little rainfall that came through my part of the world last night, dumped about 1.9 inches, although I think that was fairly rare in terms of how much. I'm wondering how much rain we kind of need, and what do you see over the next week or so?
Well, oddly enough, we could use a lot more rain. The big problem over the last few days has been that we've had a lot of cloud cover across the Midwest, and that's essentially limited daytime heating. Now, it might not seem intuitive, but you actually want it to be sunny and hot out during the day, because that makes it more likely for thunderstorms to form later in the afternoon and in the evening. That's because all that sunshine makes it very warm outside, and a warm air mass is unstable. So then when you add a little circulation to it, you can pop a thunderstorm or two. The problem, again, over the last few days has been we've had a lot of cloudiness, and that's essentially prevented that whole setup from occurring. So even though we had great dynamics or great energy passing right above us, it didn't generate too much rain, and a lot less rain than was expected, simply because we had a lot of cool weather that prevented everything from destabilizing. The big uncertainty today regards, is that going to happen again? We do have a pretty strong circulation located in Iowa this afternoon. We are seeing a little bit of breaks out there with some sunshine coming on through, though certainly not a completely sunny day, but we should see some strong thunderstorms pop up between northern Iowa and northern Illinois over the next several hours, and then we'll see how that all pans out tonight. It's a very nebulous forecast, real tough to figure this one out, but basically some thunderstorms around, but we're still going to need more no matter how this pans out.
And then if you look towards the end of the month, what do you see?
Well, once we get into Sunday and Monday, so only a few days from now, we'll see another round of thunderstorms. Those should have higher coverage than what we're expecting over the next 24 hours. But the problem there is that amounts might not be all that great. It's a pretty strong system, but it's also associated with a cool front. Generally, our heavy rains occur when we have warm fronts. This is going to be a cool front type rain event. After we get beyond Sunday and Monday, it's going to turn dry, but pretty cool here for a few days next week. So not the unusual or problematic combination of dry and hot weather. But by the time you add all of this up, we're looking for about a half inch on the low side to 1.5 inches on the high side over the next 5 days. That's not quite enough rain. We've been a little dry here for a while. We're going to need more. We know next week will be fairly dry. That leads us into the last 5 days of the month. We should see some thunderstorms around at that point, Todd, but the problem is that's 10 to 14 days away. You know how weather forecasts are that far out. They're real difficult to make. So depending on how rain pans out here over the next few days, we might actually be looking for some more rain toward the last few days of the month.
Speaking of looking further out, I believe that there is a new release looking into the wintertime months. What does it show?
Well, it's basically showing a very classic El Nino type of weather pattern across the United States this winter. And that would result in a mild winter for most of the Midwest, with a wet winter across the southern tier of states, say California through Texas into Florida. Now, we have a little bit of caution we'd like to advise here. Although we do have an El Nino that appears to be forming, there's a number of cracks that have developed over the last 6 weeks Normally at this time of the year, if an El Nino is about to develop, we'll see the water temperatures in the Pacific Ocean start to warm every single week going forward, and then generally peak sometime in December or January. That was taking place from over the last few months, but it all stopped on July 1st, and at that point in time, we started to cool. Now, we didn't cool a lot, but we did cool enough that you can see it on the charts, and it makes you scratch your head and say, isn't El Nino really forming? So that's going to take a little bit of time to figure out. Generally, El Nino will reveal its cards in September, October, November. So we think in 4 to 6 weeks from now, we'll have a lot better idea of what's happening and whether or not this cooling is a data blip or it's actually a sign that an El Nino is not forming. So that is something to watch here going forward.
Hey, thanks so much for the update from the Climate Prediction Center and your updates as well. We appreciate that much.
You're very welcome, Todd. Always great to be here.
That, of course, is Mike Tenora. He is with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. I'm UofI Extension's Todd Gleason.